Okay, well, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Soleri Report, Onat Akinsi, who once a week, one of the things I most look forward to is talking with Onat. He is an engineer and a research consultant and is the creator of Innovation Rex, which I encourage you to check out. It's linked from the blog post for the Soleri Report. He advises me on all things technological. He has a wide background. He's an engineer by training. He has a PhD in mechanical engineering from Montreal Polytechnic, and he's published in fields related to machine design and air analysis. But he has wide experience, including with surgical robots and aerospace and power utilities. And he has the integrity of a well-trained engineer, but he is remarkably creative for someone with that background. And one of the reasons I find that to be so invaluable is if you look at what's happening in a wide variety of fields within technology and science, we're talking about different specific innovations that then dovetail with others. And we're getting sort of very innovative results, not just within fields, but across sectors. And so it takes a lot of creativity to look at it and think about it, which is why I'm so grateful he's in my life. So, Onat, welcome to the Soleri Report. And you're coming in from Montreal, correct? Okay, well, I hope it's a little bit cooler there than it is here in San Francisco. We're talking today about 3D printing. And 3D printing, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about 3D printing is you can't open the papers these days without seeing articles on 3D printing. So why don't we start off by talking about 3D printing, basically what is it and why is it something that is worth knowing about?
Well, 3D printing is also additive manufacturing. It's the process of first you prepare your design files in some software. And then you input your files into the 3D printer processor. And then depending on the 3D printer type, the print head or either curves out the plastic material or with a laser beam solidifies a layer of powder material. And after this, layer by layer, you put your material, and after the first layer solidifies, the print head returns and forms another layer and so on. So the layers accumulate on top of each other, and a 3D object is created. So this is the definition. And why is this important is the first point is the democratization of manufacturing. 3D printing liberates you from the constraints of traditional manufacturing. It gives you new means for entrepreneurship and at the same time for personal expression. This is also very closely connected to the maker movement and rising technological DIY culture. This allows you, 3D printing allows us to put our ideas into reality more easily. The way the switch from inventor to entrepreneur is much, much shorter because 3D printers are getting cheaper and more flexible by the day. So you have more possibilities of seeing your dreams concretely in front of you. And coupled with this, there are also financial resources offered by crowdfunding. An inventor can offer his or her product to the market much more efficiently. So basically, you have your idea. You can easily make a prototype on your 3D printer. And based on that, you can attract investors from crowdfunding sites. So this democratization of manufacturing offers many possibilities. The first one is simply that you can print your files, your ideas easily on your desktop, at home, in your 3D printer. The second point is that you can share your files on online CAD model databases, such as GrabCAD, or printing service databases, such as Thingiverse. So you can share your ideas simply instead of just your product. And the third point is that you can send your files to printing services for printing. So you don't have to have the printer yourself at home. You get printing services like Shapeways, where you can send your files for printing. So this was for the democratization of manufacturing aspect. And the second aspect is mass customization. The killer app in 3D printing is personalization. So producing products for a market of one person is really the ideal of 3D printing. So this opens several possibilities. The first one is obviously you can easily manufacture your own personalized ideas into being with 3D desktop printers at home. Neil Gershenfeld, the father of FabLab movement, and one of the pioneers in the maker movement, he talks about a new literacy, a literacy that can provide you more freedom of expression. And he puts this literacy as equivalent to the popularization of reading and writing after Renaissance. So this is a huge possibility. The personal fabrication at home and the mass customization at home. And the second point is that the industry can go through this mass customization way. And companies can offer personalized products to their customers at a more affordable rate. And of course, this will depend on the product, but so the most popular applications today are the dental crowns, or hearing aids in the medical industry. They're all done by 3D printing technologies. And more prosthetic limbs are coming too. So customized products by industry is also a very promising avenue. And the third point that makes 3D printing important is the industrial side. Not the personal fabrication point, but really the technological capability of the technology, 3D printing or additive manufacturing technology. And this issue is not really much discussed in the media, but there are very distinct advantages offered by 3D printing in the industrial side too. For example, 3D printing helps in the reduction of tooling. As an example, in sandcasting, and sandcasting is most...
Just tell me what sandcasting is.
Sandcasting is basically you make a sand mold, you put some patterns on in your mold, which is of sand, and then you you remove your pattern, and the mold is solidified, and then you you put molten metal in that mold, and so in this way you obtain your part. But the problem with this is the construction of the mold. It takes a lot of time. You have to make a very intricate patterns inside the mold, and you know, it's a huge process. If especially if your product is complex and big, and it's the real art to do those molds. So 3D printing or additive manufacturing eliminates the use of these costly patterns and really eliminates the time for manufacturing this mold. You can build very complex molds with machines out of sand. So the companies like X1 or VoxelJet, they offer the machines in this side for especially sand molds, sand mold production by additive manufacturing. And the other advantages the 3D printing in industrial side is the reduction of assembly. Like General Electric Aviation, they started to produce fuel injectors and leading edges for fan blades using additive manufacturing technology. The advantage of this is that in the traditional process, you have to weld around 3D metal parts together, which is considerable work, but with 3D printing, you have in one setting the whole piece at the same time, so it offers many advantages on the labor side, tooling side. And also Boeing and Northrop Grumman, they're also started producing air ducts for the aircraft. to additive manufacturing. So it has a lot of advantages. But after this glowy introduction, I would also like to give a warning that you can't hear that much in the media. So as a concept, 3D printing has a lot of future, but the current technology is not up to our own, up to our imagination. The technology is not there. The cheapest, especially the cheapest 3D printers are not reliable by most accounts, and the quality of the products that they manufacture is really mediocre. It takes time to print even smaller pieces. It can go up to 5-6 hours for a small figurine. And the quality of surface can be really very mediocre. Like, you can see the rough lines of the layers on the products. And the second limitation will be a limitation of personal fabrication, not 3D printing, but really personal fabrication. Some industries will always be regulated, like aerospace or automotive. Like, you will never be able to do a whole aircraft or a car, because it's, I mean, you will be putting public at risk. There will all, especially in terms of primary structure, structure that support and protect the passengers. You will never be able to do that. And the second point is obviously the scale economies. Scale economies will always be there. For non-customized products, mass production will always be the production of choice. So for large volumes of commodity products, at least for the moment, additive manufacturing is not the first choice. However, for small numbers of unique customized products, 3D printing production, printed production is the best choice.
Where I see it now as making a huge difference is particularly for business, including small business. If you want to build a prototype and try something, it really does reduce the cost of what I call messing around.
Well, it is passing to a stage right now. It is coming to more part production also. Like, there's a movement in that direction, but it's still in the prototyping phase. Of course, there's a subtle optimization point for the number of parts to be produced. Like, to judge how much 3D printing is advantageous with respect to other processes. But a definite answer on the number of products is really difficult, because it will depend on dimension, complexity, material of the product. So it's difficult to evaluate exactly what the number of parts, ideal number of parts to be produced by 3D printing. But still, as with the dental crowns or hearing aids in the medical industry, it can be advantageous if the parts are very, very customized.
Right.
There is that side.
Right. If you've ever waited a month for a crown, you know how much,
right,
what a big difference it could make.
Okay.
Well, let's go a little bit into the history, because in fact, you know, 3D printing has been around for quite some time. It's just now that it's starting to reach a point where it excites our imaginations of what's possible. So maybe let's go back and look at the history.
Right. Actually, 3D printing history is older than most of us will think. It started in 1987. The first stereolithography systems from 3D systems were launched, were put into market. In 1990, there were other stereolithography systems offered by EOS, a German company. In 1991, Stratasys launched a different printer model, field deposition modeling. So it has quite a history. These companies were in the market for quite a long time. And equally important will be the work of Neil Gershenfeld, head of MIT's Center for Bits and Atoms. He and his colleagues were the real pioneers, actually, in the Maker Movement. They launched the first initiative on Fab Labs. A fab lab basically is a model lab that could be launched cheaply and quickly to provide a basic manufacturing capability even for people around the world, like people in Africa. These were actually the first maker spaces and hacker spaces. They had some basic components such as laser cutters, PNC routers, and digital electronics design, and so on. And of course, they had 3D printers. And if you read Groschenfeld's articles, really in 1990s, even a long time ago, and his book Fab, which was published in 2004, he was already talking about most of the elements we're discussing today, most of the elements that are in media today. So he knew all about that 20 years ago. So it's just very recently that all this thing came up to the media. And if you go through the stages of 3D printing, right now, well, we can sum up the evolution of 3D printing in three stages. The first is the control of a shape, like this stage we still are in. Complex shapes, curves, and hollows can be easily built by 3D printing. Complicated inside shapes is the best product type for 3D printing with respect to their machining or subtractive and manufacturing processes. Especially complicated inside shapes is an ideal process for 3D printing. So this is the stage we are in right now. We are going slowly over control over composition. It will be combining different materials, especially. Right now, we are getting to enter this stage. We just can combine different materials with different colors to obtain different shades of colors. But like mixing different materials to obtain different qualities, engineering qualities, is still not in a desirable state. It's too early to say about to talk about that. So this is still a big possibility. You can mix different materials with different engineering qualities. So let's say one stronger and one tougher, and you can optimize the final structure. And the other points will be the electronics, because right now we are assembling all the electronic products. We are putting circuits and some non-conductive surfaces and so on. So we can always, so we are dependent on 2D printing, like, you know, electronics. So we can, with 3D printing, we can always combine different conductive and non-conductive materials, and we can be more creative and create more efficient circuits. So this was for control over composition. And the third stage will be control over behavior. So this will be, you'll be able to create integrated active systems that can sense and react and compute and behave. And so we can create smart materials that can give feedback, learn and think, like robotic structures or machine structures with circuits and sensors embedded in mechanical structures, and so without a separate assembly stage, blood vessels integrated in muscles.
I was reading an article last night about it was a professor from Maine who kept talking about printing out robots. So his imagination was pretty far in the future.
Right. I mean, right now there are robots that use these smart materials, but they are not 3D printing.
Right.
But it will go there in the future. We are not there, but so the robot designs are there also. It's possible. And of course, the very last stage, the ideal stage, will be a natural conclusion of this evolution. It will be creation of new life, creating life tissues out of cells. It's already done by Organova. So really creating new life systems with intricate blood and muscle structures, the Hawk will be possible in the future. So this was a brief introduction into the past of 3D printing.
One of the things, before we go on, I wanted to mention, I'll put a link up to Gershenfeld's article, a recent article that, and actually we had it up on the blog, but I'll link in this, in those subscriber links for this. And one of the things he says is that, in fact, what's happening, and I think 3D printing is an example, but it's, in many respects, it may not even be the most important example. I just think it's the one that's captured the popular imagination. But what's happening is that we're approaching a time when a lot of these technologies that we've been working on for decades are reaching the point where the, and part of it, I think, is the materials are reaching a point where the speed at which and the cost at which we can convert bits to atoms and back into bits is speeding up. So, and that has dramatic economic impacts as well, because imagine, you know, the faster you can go from bits to atoms to bits, the less money you need to spend financing inventory, or the, you know, the easier a lot of the economic issues for, particularly for businesses, change. So I, you know, to me, I think of 3D printing as an example of this, but the profound change that's sort of upon us is this, you know, the speed and the cost of going from bits to atoms to bits. And I think that's a great point that he made. And I'll have that article up on the blog post.
As I said, it can be a big advantage for Amazon, for example, for their warehouses. So, you know, instead of, you know, having huge inventories for many of the products they can just print many of the, like, books are done. Many books are done today. Printing on demand.
Really?
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a parallel, definitely, in that direction. So maybe now I shall pass to the overview of 3D printing ecosystem.
Yeah, and I just have to brag on your PowerPoint. There's a Onat did a series of briefings with me, and then compiled them into a PowerPoint, which is you can link to in PDF form up on the blog, and it might help to look at that as you as we're following around, because we walk through the whole ecosystem, and I think it's very valuable. So make sure you check out that PowerPoint. You may want to watch or dive into the ecosystem part as we're talking.
So now I have my presentation open.
Okay.
about the 3D printing ecosystem. I'm in slide 3 that presents the whole ecosystem of 3D printing. So ecosystem concept really helps us to make a parallel between a technological ecosystem and a natural one. So it really emphasizes the interaction between different subdomains forming the ecosystem. Like here, there's 3D printers, 3D scanners, 3D CAD software, etc. And the different technologies, different technological components as species forming these domains. So it helps us to better understand, to holistically understand what's going on in the industry. Instead of just focusing on 3D printers, we have to consider all the other factors in this ecosystem, like scanners or community. So here, as we see, there are 3D printers, 3D scanners, 3D CAD software, reverse engineering software, and community. So 3D printers, we'll go more into depth in this. Basically, what everyone is talking about, or mostly, in the media, but there are also 3D scanners, which are as important, because what you print, especially in the industry, you have to inspect, you have to measure, so 3D scanners are very important in that sense. And also, if you're an artist, you want to you'll make your model by your hands, and then scan it, and then put the scanned file into a software that will produce a meshed file for suitable for 3D printing. So there's also that advantage of 3D scanners, that is the reverse engineering, where you scan your model to be able to print afterwards. There is the 3D CAD software, which is very important, where software where you can build your own models and then transform, you usually transform this to STL files to be able to 3D print the other file types to it. So the capability of your 3D CAD software is also very important.
I wanted to just say, since you and I have been talking, I can't tell you how many people I've run into, both in a business and personal capacity, who keep telling me that both the cost of the CAD software has come down so far and the quality has so improved that there's all sorts of... it's almost like we're hitting a critical mass on CAD software, which has been around for decades. But something's happening where I think so many people and young people can learn how to use it, and it's... I think a lot of it is the economics. It's just economic, and so it's more accessible and more people are using it. And that, to me, is part of the dynamic of what we're experiencing.
Exactly. Like there's free CAD software.
Really?
So, you know, it's getting very popular. You don't have to have any funding, you can just go on the internet.
20 years ago, what would it cost to buy some really good CAD software? Do you know?
Well, it will be in probably tens of thousands of good software.
And today, what does it cost to buy some good CAD software?
Well, it really depends on what you want to do.
Uh-huh.
A good one, I mean, SolidWorks is like $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's really for engineers. There are many modules in that. But if you are more on artistic side, as I said, there's the SketchUp, which is not free anymore. It was free until last year. But I think it will cost like $30 per month, something like that. There's also
right.
Tinkercad, which is nearly free. So it really all depends on what you want to do. But SolidWorks, I will say, will be suitable for most engineering applications, and
mm-hmm.
around $4,000.
Which is, for a small business, is accessible, whereas $20,000 or $30,000 might not be.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And it has many, many modules for engineering analysis. It's not only drawing, but there are many other capabilities you can have. And then there is also the reverse engineering software, like GeoMagic, Cubify, Capture, Catch 123. So with these, you transform your point clouds into models that you're going to print. So they offer another layer of capability upon the 3D CAD software. You can basically transform whatever you scan into a model to be printed. And lastly, there are communities like Shapeways, Materialize, Sculptio. So there are many types of communities, but in general, you can share your files and share your models, and then people can download them into their own computers and print them. Or you can upload your model into the website of the, let's say, Shapeways, and then people cannot download your model, but Shapeways can print it for other people who are interested in having the object in their hands. So these are the communities.
I have to tell you, when I saw your list of the communities in that PowerPoint, I was astonished. It. Right. I don't know how long has it been that these groups have come up? Is it just recent?
No, Many of them very recent, last 2-3 years, but there are so many of them right now. It's really, I think it's amazing for even people in the industry. It's just amazing how this just exploded in a very short amount of time. And they don't have, you know, the same quality, all of them. I must also add, it really depends on what you want to do again.
Right.
So maybe I'll go through some of these subdomains, 3D scanners, for example.
Yeah, please.
So if I go to the 3D scanner slide, so I'm not entering into 3D printer because you go afterwards.
Uh-huh.
So on slide 43, I have this 3D scanner ecosystem. So I classified this according to industrial high-end scanners to consumer low-end scanners. There could have been other kinds of technological classifications, but this is easier to understand, let's say. On the high-end side, there is LiDAR by Nikon, which is for use in aircraft industry. It's a huge scanner which can measure a whole fuselage. It costs like $500,000. And then we have portable arms, structured light scanners, which are more in the medium range. They can measure like big jigs and fixtures with an acceptable industrial accuracy. They're offered by Faro, Creaform, and Standigler in Germany. Structured light is basically in the hands of Germans. There are lots of German companies. And then there is the consumer side in scanners. There is new scanners like MakerBot Digitizer, much smaller, and accuracy is much less than with respect to portable arms and structured light. And then at the end, there is the consumer grade scanners. We can say any smartphone can be used 3D scanner.
That's quite amazing to me that we could someday be in a world where your smartphone can reverse engineer anything and then you can print it out on your 3D printer.
Well, this is amazing for anyone in the industry. You know, it just went so fast. So if I can go to that slide, basically you can take the photos of your object. There is Catch 123 application from Autodesk, which is free. You can download the app in your iPad or iPhone, any other smartphone, and you take photos. So your photos in 2D, two-dimensional. So the software of Autodesk, they basically stitch your 2D images to form a 3D model, a 3D point cloud. So you can have a 3D model of your let's say cat, and you know, then print it, and it's really, really, very nice. And basically this technology existed, has been in industry for many, many years. There was industrial photogrammetry, and it's still much more accurate. But still, we are seeing that, you know, the consumer side is getting heavier and heavier, and we are going there again. You can easily, the accuracy is not there, but you can easily make some artistic models by just taking the photos of your works, let's say. So it's going there, and the software is free, only that you have to go to the site of Autodesk to be able to do it. But Again, in industrial photogrammetry, it just always existed. And in CATCH 123D side, they also have the Autodesk side. They also have a database where you can download your model and share it with other people. So this is also is becoming a community. And also there are open source options even to this. I mean, you don't even have to use Autodesk's 123D or other capture, Cubify capture also is another alternative. But there is also a free, even a freer alternative to this where you can use open source software to do all these things. So you won't have to use the software of Autodesk. If you are geek enough, you can really play around with algorithms and create your own software. You won't have the limits of Autodesk software, such as the number of photos or relatively low resolution photos. So sky is the limit in this. So this is for scanners. I'm going through my this slide about CAD software, CAD and CAE, slide number 100. So CAD is basically computer-aided drawing, and CAE is computer-aided engineering, and CAM is computer-aided manufacturing. So as you see here, there are many kinds of CAD software in the market. I again classify according to from industrial to consumer. So we have these high-end models such as CATIA, NX, or Creo, with which you can do anything you want. It's really CAD, CAE, CAM, all combined. You can draw your parts, you can do engineering analysis, and you can prepare your files on for manufacturing on CNC machining or other sheet metal forming, molding techniques. It's really a complete system, which can cost at the very bottom up to like $30,000, and it can go up to, depending on the number of modules, to $70,000. So it's really, really very high end. There is CAD and CAE software such as SolidWorks and Autodesk. Basically, SolidWorks also belongs to Dassault as CATIA does, so it's the same company. But it only costs like $4,000 or $5,000 depending on the module. You can again do engineering analysis. It is not as advanced as CATIA or NX, but still it will do most of the job. And then, as you mentioned, we are going more and more consumer low-end products like Tinkercad. I guess it's like $20-$30 a month. Before it was free, but now it's been bought by Autodesk. And then there's free CAD. There are other free CAD software. They're only for drawing, though. There is no engineering analysis. If you're on the artistic side, it will work very fine. And even, you know, for very simple products, it will work fine. If you go to slide number 104, for example, with Autodesk, you can do injection molding simulation. They have a module called Moldflow. You can do design optimization on slide number 5. So you can change the parameters of your model, and you can optimize your model according to the qualities you want to have on your model. And if we go to slide 106, we have Google SketchUp, where you can basically build. It's been Google until not last year. Now it's been bought by Trimble. I don't think they're free right now, but it offers many possibilities. And my neighbors designed their own house with on Google SketchUp. And so to renovate, it has many, many drawing capabilities. There's Tinkercad, again, more on the mature side. It offers, again, many basic capabilities you want to have on your drawing side. So now I'm passing to the 3D printing communities. So this is slide number 109. So 3D printing services are, again, very diverse. Here also there is the industrial, I wouldn't say industrial, but, you know, high-end and low-end side. There are, like, 3D printing services with no model downloads, such as Shapeways, Sculptil, or layer by layer. They're more, I will classify as high-end in the sense that your models are precious for you. You don't want to share them with other people. You just want to give the possibility of printing them through Shapeways so that other people can order them, but you don't share the models. But there are also other services such as Cubify or CraftRox, where that you can share also. The users can also download your models, so you have this opportunity. There's Thingiverse. People can download your models and print them on their 3D printers at home. So there you give complete freedom for people to use your own files. But unfortunately, the quality also lowers when you do that.
Sorry, what did you say? Oh, no, didn't hear it.
You can always share your models with people freely. But in general, people doing this, like, their models are of not so great quality.
Right.
Like, the freer it is, the model, I mean, the quality gets a little bit downgraded. And then there are other sites like GrabCAD, which is becoming really big, and they're based in Boston. And you can upload your models and download other people's models. There are models done in every kind of software, such as SolidWorks, Autodesk, CATIA, you name it. And, you know, there's a huge range of people. There are professional engineers sharing their models. There are amateur students sharing their models. But you can obtain many software models for basically free. And it's a great sharing site. I use some of their files in my work, you know, for testing the capability of software. So it's really very well designed. And there are also, like, meta search engines for 3D printable files, such as Yagi. So you can make a general search about any kind of file, you can go to Yagi for your own searches. So if you go to slide number 111, you can see that here is Cubify, free files, and the quality is really, you know, it's not that desirable. And in Shapeways, slide 112, the quality of the shared models, the models are not shared, so the quality gets really, really high. It's really not jewelry. And in slide number 113, it's layer by layer. They give a printability guarantee. You can't download, again, the model, but they'll print them for you. And this guarantee is interesting because not every file can be printed. So they give you and this is a good glimpse of, you know, the present capabilities of 3D printers. So they have an additional printability guarantee. They verify all the downloaded files to see if they're actually printable. So this is also important. So in slide 118, there is Amazon offering 3D printing, additive manufacturing products, be it 3D printers, 3D printing materials. You have all kinds of possibilities. They have an option for 3D printing. And recently also eBay, they have an app for, again, to be able to print relatively simple parts on 3D printing. So this was for the general ecosystem, apart from 3D printers. So I guess we can go to our 3D printers themselves.
Okay.
So if we go to our slide number 3, slide number 6, I made a classification of 3D printers. This I follow the ASTM F42 classification. It's very recent standard.
We have 15 minutes listed for this section, but we're running over. Can we do it in, I don't know, can we do it in half that?
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
This classification comes from ASTM F42 committee. These are representative companies. The list is not exhaustive. There are different classes of 3D printing. Like in the media, again, we always hear about 3D printing, but there are many different kinds of 3D printing. The most popular one, because the printers are cheapest in this category, is material extrusion, like Stratasys module, MakerBot, Cube, RepRap. They all belong to this category. Then there is material jetting from Stratasys, Connex, 3D Systems Project. It's a different, more higher quality class of 3D printing. Then there's binder jetting from X1 and Voxel Jet, which has been bought by 3D Systems recently. And then we have a wet polymerization, which is basically stereolithography from 3D Systems. And lastly, there's powder bed fusion or laser sintering from EOS in Germany and 3D Systems.
Okay, so let me go over this again. It's material extrusion, material jetting, binder jetting, vat photopolymerization, and powder bed fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So okay, I'm ready to go.
If you go to slide number 7, this is material extrusion. It's basically you extrude your material through a nozzle, and the extrusion nozzle build a platform like layer by layer. Either your platform or your head moves in the Z-plane, and then your platform, again, your platform and printhead can also move in XY-plane. So when a layer is finished, either the build platform moves down, up, or your printhead, and another layer starts to be created. So this is the basic, the most common, popular, let's say, 3D printing class. If you go to slide 8, so this is the most popular process. And the first material extrusion process was patented by Stratasys, and they call it fused deposition modeling. And their printers, before they bought MakerBot, they range from $10,000 to $500,000. So there's a big range. Stratasys module, their cheapest model, as you see here, is $10,000. And there are other companies. If you go to slide 9, like MakerBot, they've been recently bought by Stratasys. Their replicator costs only $2,200. So the advantage is obviously designed for consumers, not that obvious, because they closed their open source structure. So it's not very fun to play, but for hobbyists, because they went proprietary, and the disadvantage of this and other, also I will say other desktop 3D printers right now, is that product quality can be variable, and it will probably depend also on the complexity of what you want to print. So you can always see those rough lines of layers on your product. Even though their resolution is getting lower and lower by the day, like when they started it was 0.5 millimeters, and now it's getting up to 100 microns. So it's in a good direction. So if you go to slide 10, the advantages of personal desktop printers, obviously they're cheap enough for mass consumption. They're ideal for prototypes and ideal for homes, offices, and classrooms, for making maker movements in general. As well as they're open source. The disadvantages will be, the first will be, and this is also valid for other class of 3D printers too, you have to buy the printing material from the manufacturer, as you will buy cartridges for your inkjet printer. So it's like Gillette's razor blade model. They give the blade free, but razors cost a lot. So it's a little bit.
I know. When I first saw the prices, I said, "Oh!" And I thought my color printer was bad.
Wait, it's very similar to that, actually.
Yeah, it's really very expensive.
And so the life cycle cost, I mean, your investment is higher than, and most of the time will be higher than expected, especially if you print a lot. And the other problem is there's the need for material standardization. Everyone has his own materials these days. There are no standards for either materials nor processes. Everyone is doing its own thing. It's not. It is still in a very fragmented state. And for material extrusion, the material should be plastic because of heating requirements, and you can't have metals, for example. And lastly, you'll have high in-plane properties, like your layer properties will be high, but once you, the layer by layer quality will be low, because you are adding your layers on top of each other, and that lowers the quality of your whole product. So I'll go quickly to material jetting. It's number 16. I put some links about material extrusion here, so if people interested in this can go to those sites. And so now I'm in slide 16. Material jetting is the process where the 2D printer, it's like an inkjet head, and it selectively deposits the material, like in really inkjet printers. The company started this in Israel. They really used very small structures to inkjet printers. So, then the layers are cured with UV light.
That's ultraviolet light?
Yes.
Okay.
And the main advantage of this, if you go to slide number 18, resolution is lower than the material extrusion. So the surface quality is better. You can go down to until 16 micrometers. So it's very, very good. Yeah, the products you obtain are much smoother. You can print very fine features, and you can use different kinds of materials, but again, no metals is important. And you're all again stuck to plastics because of heating requirements. And prices are much higher for stress models for $150,000. It's still a disadvantage. And another disadvantage is that there is no high performance or engineering materials. This will be also true for most of the 3D printing systems using material extrusion. You don't have high strength materials that could be used, let's say, in even secondary structure for aerospace, the material strength is not enough for material jetting. So I'm going to binary jetting right now. It's slide number 21. So in this method, this class of 3D printing, a liquid binder is deposited through inkjet nozzles on some powder material in a powder bed. And then you either, again, the same principle, you either lower your platform, you are either, or either it goes up. So you obtain, you solidify layer by layer. You basically glue your layers of powder material.
What's the powder material made from?
Well, it really depends on the company. It can be made from plastics or metals.
Mm-hmm.
Like X1, for example, is they obviously have sands, as I mentioned. It's the real for that real niche now, sand molds. You can use quartz or specialty sands, but you can also use metal powders and plastic.
So you can make something
here
quite strong.
Have more opportunities for different materials.
Right.
And this system was originally developed by MIT, and right now, 3D Systems and X1, they're using the license technology from MIT. So if you go to slide 23, like X1, again, they can, for example, use stainless steel. But there's always a secondary cycle here for furnace for putting the binder out, so it's a little bit more complicated. And X1 models are also used in Shapeways, a community service, a printing service, basically, where they can print your models in metal, using X1's machines. Then slide number 24, they have sand systems, X1s. So, these systems are used for sand molds and cores in automotive and oil and gas customers. So it's not only prototypes, and you can basically make products with this technology. But again, I must add, this is at a much higher price. Like X1, the simplest machine, I guess, starts with from $150,000 at least. At that point, it's very expensive. And Ford Motor is using, again, for some prototype parts in their casting prototype parts. So there are other kinds of binary jetting companies. If you go to slide 26, X1's competitor, there's VoxelJet, which uses very similar kind of technology. There are also laser sintering companies. They are basically in Germany, many of these laser sintering companies. It's like there is a German policy to, like a government policy, probably to direct companies on this side, which is also very promising. So it's an industrial side rather than consumer side, and you don't hear these companies as much in the media, of course. And then there is the electron beam sintering companies using a very similar principle, but instead of laser, they use electron beam, such as Arcam, to make especially prosthetic limbs. So I have other examples of VoxelJet, and I put some links again about X1 for interested people to go. Then there is stereolithography, wet photopolymerization. So in this, you basically cure a photopolymer with a light, cure a material, let's say, with just a ultraviolet light. It's being commercialized and treated by 3D Systems a long time ago, as I told you. And the quality is much higher than material extrusion processes because we're using light, and the resolution is much lower. the source quality is much better, but they cost more if you go to the Swarm utility. Some of the industrial applications can cost up to $1 million for big products. If you go to slide number 31, so there's been an interesting development. There's been a company which started from Kickstarter. They launched a desktop STL machine that will be using the same technology from 2D systems. So this will be MakerBot's counterpart, let's say, but with higher resolution, higher quality, and a little bit more pricey, 2030, which is stick to 2200. But they've been sued by 3D Systems, and they've been using the 3D Systems license, so paying royalties to them. This is an interesting development. So the disadvantages of this technology is, again, the materials cost a lot, it's like $175 to $250 per kilogram. With respect to thermoplastics for injection molding, which cost like $2 to $3 per kilogram. So it's a huge, huge material cost. They cannot be as strong in the counterpart, with respect to the counterpart injection molding, these plastics, and some of them can be toxic. So it's how much it will be safe to use this technology in the workshop. You have to have a good ventilation system. And again, there's no metals that you can use with this system for the time being. And the last technology is powder bed fusion, slide number 34. This is a similar technology. You have a powder material and you selectively melt it by a laser electron beam. You're melting. In this case, you are melting your material and solidifying. So this is also used for both metal and polymer side. And several metals can be used, like steel, aluminum, titanium. And you can obtain more uniform part characteristics with respect to casting, but it can again be dependent on what you're building. Like, let's say if your part is too big, it can even be worse than casting. It all depends on what your part is, what you're trying to do. So if your part is too big, it will take time to cool off, and the part characteristic in the end will not be as uniform.
Is it just the Germans who do this, or do any of the Americans do it?
Americans, I will have to. There are American companies too. I don't remember right now, but of course. It's really more like in German side.
It's the Germans who make it, yeah.
Right. And also they have a history on this. They've been doing this for a long time. And the 3D printing characteristics, and these materials are the metals that we use in this are also expensive with respect to conventional counterparts, so it's still the material part is a bottleneck, and cooling again is a problem after powder bed fusion because if you have to wait for the material to cool, and if your part is big, it will take time. Even if your process is fast, you still have to wait for cooling, so it's another disadvantage. So I guess this was for the 3D printers.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I haven't seen one operate yet, and I've seen a little one operate at Tech Shop, but I haven't seen the big ones operate, and except on the, there are lots of videos on YouTube where you can kind of watch them operate. So I've watched plenty of videos. Okay, well, So Tell us, let me just turn to the outline. What does this all mean?
Well, about the future, I will say, I have my list of negatives for the negative aspects of the 3D printing for now, for today.
Okay.
So I want to start from the negative part, not to finish with the negative aspect. So currently, as I said before too, materials still are too expensive with respect to, let's say, injection molding. If you use plastic materials, it can cost up to 50 to 100 times. And standards are missing. They start to form ASTM, ISO committees, still on the material side and or process side.
Could you just explain what the ASTM and ISO are? Not everybody would know.
So ISO is International Standards Organization. It's a big organization where they, an ASTM is like the equivalent in US, where they organize, they standardize these processes and materials implied are used in these processes so that we can judge the quality uniformly in every aspect of a process. And they're very important in, if you want to build an aircraft, for example, you want to be certified according to these organizations' qualifications. And most of the time, the standards are prepared by a committee of experts, so you are sure that using these standards, you know, when you use these standards, your parts are really up to the standards of the industry you are in. The other negative point I would say is about intellectual property side. It concerns replication permission. So with this technology, especially in the scanners, as you mentioned, people can take photos of sculptures in a museum and print them. Or if, let's say, you displayed your works somewhere, and people can again take photos and make some transfer them to clouds and print them. So what about the copyright issues? It can create many headaches in the future. The second issue about, again, intellectual property is so even though 3D printing is largely linked to hackerspace or maker movements, we should not forget that many technologies are covered by patents from established companies, such as 3D systems and strategies. Like I gave before the example of Formlabs, which was financed by Kickstarter. They got sued by 3D systems, and they finally reached a settlement for paying royalties. So we have to be careful with our inventive initiatives because of this patent issues. And the second and the third issue about intellectual property is that as we have to be careful with intellectual property, we also have to be careful with our open source endeavors and try not to be exploited, because some of the initially open source companies recently turned proprietary, such as MakerBot. They've been bought by Stratasys for $400 million. And so all those funds got transferred to a few people, and not to the open community that, you know, MakerBot sprung from. They basically used in the first stages of their company all open source projects, such as Arduino, RapRap, or other open software. So this is another important point. Not to get maybe exploited in the open software, open source side of 3D printing. So now this was the negative part. Now the positive part about the future. So conceptually, 3D printing offers huge possibilities for the future, and there is no cannot deny that. But we can. We also still have to think about holistically. We have to think 3D printing in a context of ecosystem of manufacturing. 3D printing in context of other conventional processes, machines, and materials such as laser cutters, CNC machines, control systems. They'll be complementary to all the ecosystem manufacturing that still exists. An interesting point will be hybrid technologies. Like there will probably be new applications of 3D printing in the assembly side. There will probably be 3D printing combined with milling, like classical machining technologies. It's actually already been done by a company called Matsura in Japan. The machine can 3D print. They can laser sinter and mill at the same time in the same machine.
So let me ask a question, Anant, because I live in a part of the country where the auto parts business is enormous, but we also still have a lot of small machine shops. Could this technology get us to the point where the local machine shop is making a lot of the parts for the farm equipment and the cars and the appliances? Is that possible?
Well, it will be possible, I will say. But it will, again, I will be on cautious side. It will all depend on the parts they want to make.
Right.
The parts appliances will be like in, you know, let's say millimeters. They can do it very easily with low cost printers. But if you go like to the, you know, like the cylinders of an engine, so there you have much lower tolerances. You have to be, on the more high-end side of 3D printers. So it will all depend on the application. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is definitely a direction, a movement in that direction, but it will, again, depend on what your application will be. And the other interesting direction will be the material side, as I mentioned before, like smart intelligent structures done by smart materials, where you can embed materials that you can react with, like use as sensors, or use in actuation, use like small cylinders or mechanisms instead of, you know, building them, assembling them from mechanical parts. You'll just be able to print them, hopefully in the future. And another interesting thing will be new applications. So we need definitely new applications, and no one knows how this will go. We don't know exactly what the killer applications will be in this. So I guess if you were to ask the inventors of the computer science in the 30s, 40s about the daily use of their theories 70, 80 years later, they wouldn't be able to, you know, describe all the software architecture they have today. So it's difficult to predict about the new applications. Probably it will be, I will bet more on flexible electronic side, where you won't need big parts. I mean, for personal fabrication again, where you won't need very big pieces, and you could build some customized electronics at home depending on your desires or needs. Lastly, of course, again, this is the ideal to print life out of printers, out of cells. As we mentioned, there's been Organova, they're actually, they can only build tissues about 20 cells thick, to be used for testing drugs right now. So it's in a very rudimentary stage right now. But hopefully this will also be an industry in the future, so we'll be able to create organs cell by cell, literally printing organs. So the future of tissue engineering could depend on this, printing sheets of cardiac tissues.
I was out here in California, and I came back, I think, a year or two ago after Organova first started, and okay. I was telling someone about it, and they said, they didn't believe me. They thought I was making it up. And just then they turned on their television set, and there was a TV show about somebody was getting I think it was a kidney transplant, and they had a 3D printer that was printing out a new kidney. So I said, well, Hollywood's getting you ready.
Right, exactly. I mean, we are going in that direction, definitely. And so we can hopefully renew and patch, you know, the tissues on our hearts and on our kidneys. And for an ideal situation, if I can use Neil Gershenfeld words, then we will transition from personal fabrication to the fabrication of a person.
Oh.
So this is the ultimate state.
I'll go along with a kidney. I don't think they can fabricate a person.
Well, you know, just some spare parts.
Right. So tell us, Onat, where can people learn more about 3D printing? If they've listened to this, if they've gone through your PowerPoint, where do they find more information?
Yes, the main problem with 3D printing right now is that there are not so many reference books, especially in academia, because it's very, very new. And as there are no standards, I guess, you know, it's not easy for professors to teach this. There are popular books such as Makers from Chris Anderson. There's Fab from Neil Gershenfeld, as I mentioned. And they're very interesting for starting as a, you know, as an introduction to the field. There's the Maker magazines, all over the place. They're, you know, very fun. Their website is very well designed. There is the Wired magazine, which frequently talks about the 3D printing issues. Then there are websites, such as Instructables. This is not only on 3D printing, but a lot of, you know, other technologies concerning maker movements. And there are blogs like TechCrunch, Ars Technica, or Engadget, where you can find, you know, you can find information about new developments in the field. And of course, lastly, there is the Kickstarter website itself, which is always good to check to see who is doing what, because, you know, there is advancing so fast, no one can follow what's going on exactly, even in the media. So you can always use the Kickstarter site.
Okay, and tell us how we keep up with you. How do we find you? How do we contact you? Just describe your blog a little bit.
I have my my website, innovationrex.com, and so I am doing research consultancy for different companies right now. So if people are interested, of course, I'm open to be contacted. You'll probably put my email on your website.
Do you want me to put it up on the subscriber? I'll put it up on the subscriber links.
Okay. As my name is a little bit weird, I don't dare to tell my email address.
Okay, well, you know, Onat, this has been this has been an incredibly useful process, learning about 3D printing from you. And I think, you know, when you look at the media, I think of all the different kinds of fabrication technology, this is the one that is the easiest for the layperson to understand. And of course, you know, the price point is coming down on the little ones. So, it's captured our imagination, and it's clearly being promoted a lot by the media. But finding out the real deal on it is a whole nother process. And you've done an incredible job of helping me understand not just what they are, but how they fit into a much broader 3D ecosystem. And I think this has been invaluable. So I'm hoping to get you back on the Salira report to do. There's a lot more to talk about, and part of one of the ones I'm, as you know, most interested in is the composite materials, because part of what's happening is a revolution in the materials as well. So with that, I can't thank you enough for being on the Salira report, and I want you to promise us all you'll come back.
Thank you, promise.
Okay, you have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.